Lavrov made a number of statements to attendees of the Leaders of Russia contest. It's like a young Russian leaders forum. And so this is basically what he said. He goes, it's possible that the initiative to introduce a NATO peacekeeping contingent to Ukraine implies the control of Poland in the western part of the country. So what he's saying here is that, as you may have heard, and this is maybe going to fill you in now, the Ukrainian side proposed a, that since Poland is neutral, that Polish peacekeepers can come in to guarantee the neutrality of Ukraine. And so now Lavrov is saying this is a NATO contingent, and it also implies that Poland would actually control western part of the country. And this would create a mayhem because it would fulfill some kind of NATO thing to maybe be part of creating a Western Ukrainian state. I've called it Galicia. I've called it maybe Ruthenia or Rusinia, Transcarpathia, whatever you want to call it. But it's the issue there, people will know, is that the original Galician Nazi ethnic cleansing campaign was against Poles. So a Polish occupation for peacekeeping of Western Ukraine is kind of a non-starter for the very radicals that would so I don't think actually that was introduced by the Ukrainian side. I think that was the when you saw Slovenia and Poland, Slovakia, and I think Hungary, those leaders met and to discuss, maybe in Romania rather, a few days ago, when you saw them, pictures of them all at a table together. That I think was one of the proposals that they came out with. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, he says the Ukrainian crisis was caused by the policy pursued by the West towards Russia when it realized that Russia would not be obedient. And that's obedience, of course, to the World Economic Forum, the IMF, the Western capital institutions. And it's not about them investing and making money on returns. Just to understand that is the normal, it's not necessarily advantageous all the way or desirable, but that is the normal diplomatic and global economic stance that most countries in the world take towards these global financing agencies that basically run the world and determine policy of things that like the World Economic Forum's being a think tank for the IMF. So that's a big one. That's very clear. You saw right away, boom, they're ejected from World Economic Forum. Boom, swipe, MasterCard, Visa, boom, sanctions, sanctions, sanctions. So that's not a hyper reality simulacrum conspiracy theory. That's not happening. That's not some part of a movie or something where it's all fake. Okay. Let's see. He says Zelensky's assurances that he does not support neo-Nazis are at odds with his actual actions. Also, yeah, this is, you've seen Zelensky and he's appealing to Western audiences because no one in the country believes a lick of that. Nobody involved in this conflict believes a lick of that. These are statements that are manicured for normies that didn't know who Zelensky was. And call him Kerensky or whatever accidentally. Like these are for normies that don't even know who Zelensky is or was going into this whole conflict for some time. You follow? And it's meant to put at arm's length the Nazi phenomenon. And in fact, his whole presidency is based on putting at arm's length the whole Nazi phenomenon. The last President Poroshenko would always say, like, we're going to make them suffer. He made this whole us and them, not Russians, them, like Ukrainians of the wrong ethnicity, yo. Like, this is ethnic cleansing. This is hardcore ethno-nationalism, okay? Poroshenko said, our children will go to school and their children will live in basements, meaning like they'll be afraid of being shelled. It's not like they're going to be unemployed basement dwellers at the age of 30. They're saying like you're going to be in basements because of the shelling. We're going to, be bombing your neighborhoods, or you'll be in fear of those bombs and you'll be living in basements. Believe me, that's how it works. My wife survived the same when Clinton's deep state cabal was bombing Yugoslavia. So that's a real thing. People live in basements. Even if there's the bombs aren't going off like across the street from them, it could. And that danger is it's terrorism, okay? And over the country had 1 or 2 million internally displaced and 500,000 to 1 million or more moved to Russia. But that's from the policy. And those policies didn't change from Poroshenko's regime to Zelensky. Zelensky was elected in part by a lot of people voted for him who wanted to see that stuff stop. So he was kind of like the friendly face of the same policies. Like people who were tired of Bush, this is like a Bush to Obama thing. Like people who were tired of like the war on terror and all that stuff and Homeland Security and all that stuff from Bush. They voted for Obama. Even like Republicans voted for Obama because they were tired of that stuff at the time. Like Obama fooled a lot of people. And the Obama-Zelensky connection is like the most appropriate. And like the Poroshenko-Bush connection is like also like an equal parallel. And people saw actually things got worse in many ways with Obama, because he pursued those same policies of terrorism against innocent populations in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he did so while the media hologram and people that are supposed to be against the war made excuse after excuse for him. So Zelensky and Obama are very apt comparisons, just sort of breaking down what Lavrov means about Zelensky's assurances that he does not support neo-Nazis are at odds with his actual actions. Yes, absolutely. All right, then he goes, the United States holds the hand of the Ukrainian delegation in negotiations with Russia, not allowing Kiev to agree even to the minimum demands that Moscow puts forward. Understand that. The United States holds the hand of the Ukrainian delegation in negotiations with Russia, not allowing Kiev to agree even to the minimum demands that Moscow puts forward. That's what, and I've discussed before actually why the negotiations aren't even, it's not like they've discovered this for the first time in negotiations. And yesterday I gave a public discourse for everyone on the channel explaining why in fact Russia does these negotiations. It's not because they expect movement. But that's very clear now. He's saying like the United States does not allow them to make peace. This next one is big. This next one is big. Russia will not initiate the establishment of relations with the West. Let's see how they themselves will get out of the impasse into which they have driven themselves. Right. This is basically saying our line is open. The ball is in your court. They don't need, they don't, they're not trying, they're not doing these things to then get someone's attention so that they come, then they're expected to come knocking on the door and say, okay, we've done these things, you ready to talk? No. They have their agenda and they're gonna do this stuff in Ukraine now. And if anybody wants them to do things differently or to negotiate some kind of outcome, Russia doesn't need agreement with anyone now to pursue their aims in Ukraine. Somebody also asked, why don't they close these borders off from weapons and mercenaries coming in? Well, they must understand that the flow of weapons and mercenaries is not significant to the outcome of their overall strategy. And ergo, the weapons and people coming in will simply be a drain on those resources, on the tolerance of Western populations who see that 15 billion is going to Ukraine or whatever it is, within the context of the shutdowns of business and the loss of life and the loss of liberty and the loss of businesses that have been shut down, that people, like, they're not going to be compensating people for vaccine injuries, but they will be sending money and weapons into Ukraine. And all of these gung-ho mercenaries, guys who maybe they have service from Afghanistan and Iraq, and they're not dealing with, and a lot of those guys got hurt. I mean, but a lot of those guys didn't, or they were brought in to do just patrol, different types of, post-conflict operations, and they think it's all just a game. They didn't take the types of ratio hits losses that is really happening. And if you want to pour those kind of people into this conflict, that's exactly why the Chinese let the Uyghur extremists, the ones that you've seen that are being re-educated in those camps, it's not the whole Uyghur population. It's people that were Islamicized by Wahhabists, Salafists, because they're Muslims. They're Muslims in that part of China. Okay, and so China could have closed their border and not allowed these Uyghurs to go to fight on the side of ISIS in Syria, but they let them go. They let them go. In fact, they infiltrated them so that their positions would be known to the Syrian and Russian armies so that those guys could get blown up before they even got set up, like before they could even begin the conflict phase of their operation, just when they were kind of grouping in Iraq or Syria, they got struck by Russian Air Force and obliterated. That was, 2015, 2016, if I recall. So just like Russia, just like China let the Uyghurs in, I think that it makes sense that that Russia, even though they could, using strikes from naval assets there in the Black Sea, could hit any of these places, could basically affect closure, but it's better to let them come in and then hit them there once they're in, rather than closing the border. Closing the border is a different type of commitment. It's a different type of it's you have to physically control. Now you're taking it's a liability militarily. It's far west in the country, and you're taking on a lot more than you need to handle operationally. It doesn't even make sense, because then you have then you're responsible for humanitarian, who comes in, who comes out. You're prone to false flags, allegations. Just let that western part of the country be open to whatever. And whatever comes in can be handled, and it's better to handle it now than later. Does that make sense? So, finally, he says, Lavrov says, the West fell off the chain, basically lost their sense of it, just totally lost their shit, when it realized that the Russian operation in Ukraine thwarted their anti-Russian project. The goal of the globalists, Putin is not part of the globalist plan, unless you take a very broad view that every contingency plan involves all the facts on the ground. But Putin is not a cooperating asset. He's a known quantity of which plans can be built around, but they're not either the most optimum plans, nor are they plans that are guaranteed to succeed in contingency planning. Does that make sense? So yeah, is he part of the plan? Well, I mean, he's taken to in account, like the reality of Russia's reality is taken into in account of, but in fact, the situation is that the Western structures don't really understand the vectors of Russian power. Okay, they thought that because of the sanctions and SWIFT, MasterCard, Visa, and whatnot, that the oligarchy would turn against him. And they didn't realize, and they took a huge hit. I think they lost between 30 and 50 billion in day one of this stuff that happened at the end of February, right? And you would think those oligarchs, like if that was the West, they would have assassinated that Kennedy. They would have, they would have impeached that Trump. Do you understand? This is a very different situation. And they're realizing what a state looks like when a state is more powerful than the oligarchy, right? When the state is not a plutocracy, when the state stands above all of the different class antagonisms and organizational differences between the socioeconomic groupings of that society. It's very rare to have a state that stands above those things, and it defies their understanding of the model of states, and it confronts them in a very ugly way because their view is that states that existed separate from those from the plutocracy are mythologies that plutocrats have created to create legitimacy in the eyes of populations. So they have a very cynical view of history. So they know that the image that Russia projects is that the state is more powerful than the oligarchy, than the plutocracy, that it's not a plutocracy because the oligarchs don't control the state. But they just assume that it was a plutocracy because that's how they understand the world. And they projected that understanding of the world onto a terrain that doesn't fit. And so I think Lavrov is absolutely correct that it was completely unexpected and they fell off the chain. And their aim was that the economics and the sanctions would provoke a massive, you saw people, I don't know if it was Senator Cruz or other people, Lindsey Graham, whoever was saying, oh, we hope that there's a, that Russians take him out, and they mean like the Russian oligarchy is going to have hitmen, assassins, and they're, that because they're the billionaires, that they have a cabal there, and they're going to control, they're going to get the intelligence agencies to snipe out or kill Putin. And the fact that it's possible to have a state that doesn't operate that way, just the existence of that, they're all fucked up.